Welcome back to another episode of Speak Up, an Avalon Bay Communities podcast, proudly sponsored by our Women's Leadership Network, or WLN. This show is for Avalon Bay associates, WLN members, and anyone seeking insightful conversations that inspire both personal and professional growth. We invite leaders from all industries, backgrounds, and experience levels to speak up about the real issues shaping our workplace and the world around us. Thanks for tuning in.
Welcome to our next episode of the Speak Up podcast, hosted by Avalon Bay Communities Women's Leadership Network, or WLN, to provide real talk about real issues influencing our industry and broader communities. My name is Avra Basav-Ward. I am a manager for learning and development.
I'm Nicole Luisi-Cedino, sales and service supervisor. We're excited to kick off a new Speak Up episode, and today's episode is called Burnout, Boundaries, and Balance. Today, we are lucky to be joined by Dr. Andrea Holman, DEIB Senior Manager, Workforce Transformation at Lyra Health. Just to give a little background on Dr. Andrea, she works as the Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging Senior Manager for Lyra's Workforce Transformation Team. In this role, she leads educational content creation, primarily related to the intersection of social identity and mental health and its impact on people in the workplace. She's a counseling psychologist by training and has worked for Lyra since June 2021. Prior to this role, she served as a tenured psychology professor. And when she is not working, Dr. Holman enjoys spending her time on good food, family time, and American football. Lyra is Avalon Bay's partner in providing mental health care to all eligible Avalon Bay employees, spouses, and dependents. Through this benefit, you have access to 8 free sessions of coaching or therapy per year. And since 2015, Lyra's Workforce Mental Health Solution provides easy access to life-changing evidence-based care. Lyra's benefits are available to over 20 million people around the world, and its mission is to provide transformative care, integrating top providers, advanced technology, and a commitment to quality. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Appreciate it.
Let's get started. I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions based on your background, and I just wanted to see if you could share more about your background and your role in Lyra.
You gave a very thorough and technical definition for what I do day in and day out. And it is true. I project manage, I lead our discussion group offering, I develop content related to DEIB. But really what that means on a random Tuesday that I'm doing all day, every day, is I'm really trying to pay attention to what matters most when it comes to people showing up at work. And from my perspective, from my training, from the things I prioritize around inclusion and belonging, it's the intersection of who people are and what they do. So we aren't in vacuums. You know, when we arrive to the workplace, there are lots of things that inform not only how we show up to work, but how we work. So that's what I try to write about. I try to give voice to those things that aren't usually talked about or discussed. And I try to encourage folks in communities where their experiences have been traditionally overlooked or invalidated, and they haven't felt particularly safe or included or a level of belongingness at work. That's what I call myself doing most of the time, and very much enjoy the work, find it very meaningful.
I love that. I love that, you know, creating that sense of space and also, you know, a safe space for someone to be open and reflect on their thoughts.
Absolutely.
Now, what inspires you about mental health and wellness field? And why do you think it's important?
You know, so I'll throw back a little bit to my professor days. So I used to tell folks when I would teach Introduction to Psychology all the time, I would say, this class is the best class in this university because it relates to everything. So that's what I tend to think. Color me biased because I did get a lot of degrees in this. So I know people might have their arguments for different fields, but I just think the science and the exploration of why people are and how people are in terms of their behaviors and their motivations and their emotions, et cetera, it undergirds all the things that we do. And so to me, I think that even in the work that I do around inclusion and belonging, you can't quite explore that without looking at health and mental health and well-being, those types of things. It's very hard to separate. So that's why I find that it matters. What inspires me, I think, is that very broad impact and the potential to help people live lives that are fulfilling and that are enjoyable and meaningful. I think that's what keeps me showing back up every day.
Wow, that's so beautiful to hear, Andrea. Especially nowadays, it's very hard to, you know, it your 100% and be there and show up. But truly having that passion and that inspiration is beautiful. I have another question here for you. Mm-hmm. Avalon Bay Associates actually have access to Lyra. Can you share more about the Lyra models, tools, and resources available that companies may be able to have and employees?
Absolutely. So the way that I like to phrase this is that Lyra is set up such that it can meet people wherever they are in their mental health journey. So care is a big part of it. That's the biggest part of Lyra, you know, is getting access to a mental health professional, whether that's coaching or therapy or what have you. And that is true. But when you're looking at statistics of like how many people seek care or how many people are ready to seek care, because really, you know, the truth of the matter is that there's a lot of reasons that keep people from getting the support that they need, right? Whether that's stigma, whether that's fear, concern, access, those types of things. So if you are at a place where you have the like motivation, you have the gumption to want to seek mental health care support, it's there for you, easy access for you, your family, and that's great. But if you're not quite there, we have other things too. And that's where my team comes in outside of care. And certain things may not be directly related to an individual therapy, you know, or coaching experience, but they still impact your mental health, like how you show up to work. So when we do these things around workforce mental health or workplace well-being, that's also meeting someone where they are on their care journey. One of my favorite things that happens when I'll present at a workshop or webinar is when people say, okay, you know what? Based on what you said, I might try it. The way you said that, you know, maybe I'll think about showing up. And I love that because then we can actually care. And we've seen statistics, so we'll track that data on our team and see that that does happen, where people go to a live event and they'll say, okay, you know what, maybe I'll register after all. If you're not even going to a live event, if you say, you know what, let me just read this blog post on this particular issue, on burnout, on how to support people of this identity in this community at work or something of that nature. Maybe you just need a minute to pause so you take a meditation on the platform. You know, so that's why I feel like it's this wraparound holistic approach to meeting people wherever they are. So even if you're actively in care, but there's other things you want to look at to supplement. That's what I really like about Lyra is the fast access, the care for the whole family and meeting people where they're at.
That's beautiful, Andrea. Mm-hmm. I've had a firsthand experience with Lyra. I think that for me, it was in the beginning of my journey with Avalon and being introduced to Lyra. It was a little bit scary, as you can say, right? The stigma, you know, how one feels about the situation. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was a little bit harder to kind of get started in my journey with Lyra. And it wasn't until a wonderful coworker of mine that also mentor was such a beautiful like push, you know, nudge to begin my journey with Lyra. Mm-hmm. And not only through, you know, the opportunity that Avalon Bay offers us with 8 free sessions, but also the different programs. I was not aware of all of the different tiers that Lyra offers and all of the different programs and where it comes to like in-person, virtual, and not only that, but group therapies, which I didn't even know that that was, you know, an offer that was provided by Lyra. And when I did begin my journey, I think one of my favorite parts was the library, right? Because one of those days where you just can't seem to find maybe some peace or you're overwhelmed in a certain situation and you don't know how to, you know, deal with it, that library has just come so in handy, like you said, with meditations, you know, little videos. That's been one of my favorite journeys through my experience with Lyra. I also have a great team of Lyra professionals that has helped me throughout this journey, and not just with every day-to-day items, but with distress, you know, emotional regulation, helping, you know, even setting boundaries within work and home as well. So I think that's been such a beautiful experience. So hearing you, you know, talk about also like all the models and resources is just, it's beautiful.
Well, that's great and encouraging to hear because my team makes a lot of those videos. So I appreciate you.
I will say, I love that. That is great.
Yeah. So if you put the library and you see my face, just act natural, okay? We put some work into that. But I really love what you said too, and I appreciate your honesty in sharing, you know, the hesitation and the difficulty that you had even beginning your own care journey. Again, like you said, I'm a counseling psychologist by training. I love and appreciate and very passionate about mental health. And when I signed up for my first counseling appointment in my adult life, I'm like, I am scared. I'm nervous, you know? So it's not about the cerebral knowledge of knowing that it could help. There is something very emotional and feel very intimate about beginning to engage in that relationship. So I appreciate that you named that because if there are people who are feeling type of way, you know, about beginning care, and that's not you, you're not by yourself. And gather information. So I've even written blogs on the Lyra blog post about like, okay, here's what's going to happen when you go in there. You know, because I think demystifying the process is really helpful for folks to at least be brave enough to try. But I do think, especially for, I'm going to say it like this, in my identities as a woman, as a Black woman, as a mother, as someone who does the things for other people, it is very difficult to try to say, okay, you know what? I actually do need support. I'm going to be honest with myself. Rather than feeling like a failure to actually feel like I'm fighting for my health and wellness. That's a difficult jump to make, honestly.
Absolutely. And having that vulnerability to make that step forward is very hard. But I think having that support around you is very important. And that's where, you know, I want to piggyback off what you said. You know, Lyra provides that support. You guys have care coordinators, therapists, social workers, and that, you know, is not like regular therapy, right? Where you just go into a therapist and you sit down and you have this full session. You have all of these tools and resources and support.
For sure.
It's really beautiful.
Thank you both for, you know, kicking off the conversation and just talking about mental health and how it is health, right? Mental health is health. And I think with COVID and the pandemic happening, you know, 5 years ago at this point, there was a lot of conversation around mental health and there was a lot of increased interest and access to resources and people really talking about it because we were all sort of having our own mental health challenges during that period for a variety of different reasons. And so what I want to do now is shift that conversation to, you know, now that we have our foundation, to talk about burnout, boundaries, and balance, because I think in a lot of the identities you just shared, Andrea, and just in a lot of what mental health means to you and why you got into this field in general, there's a lot there. So I want to shift the conversation to hustle culture. And so I'm really curious to hear your perspective. We have a lot of ambitious and capable associates. And for a long time, I think, especially pre-COVID, exhaustion was kind of considered a status symbol. And that's not really the case. I think COVID really helped illuminate that. So just curious to hear your thoughts on that and hustle culture in general over the last few years.
Really, the first thing that comes to mind when you bring up those two pieces, right? So you've got this introduction of the COVID-19 pandemic, but then also to this ongoing culture of grinding and doing and producing things. When we had this kind of, some people call it this like collective traumatic experience, right, of 2020. But I don't know about you all, but I feel like I've lived lifetimes in the last 5 years. Or when a lot of people have this kind of demarcation between a pre-COVID and a post-COVID self, you know, who I am. Now, you might even weigh differently. You might have a different haircut, live in a different place, your job different, you know. So there's these ways in which we've evolved and we've had a lot going on in the past 5 years. And so I think in 2020, at least from my vantage point where I was sitting, when everything paused, we kind of gave voice and space to name that collectively traumatic experience. But time kept passing and things kept happening. And I am sort of feeling like, and I'm curious what you all think about this, but I'm feeling like now in 2025, so much has continued to happen. COVID-19 hasn't gone away. There's all these other threats to health and wellness and safety and security that now is that we've evolved to this place where you just keep going in spite of the difficult things that are going on. There's no longer this pausing to name the thing or everybody stop because this thing is going on. You see examples where you'll see small news articles as, oh, COVID spiking, you know, in this way. And like, things happen, and so you continue to go along. Yeah. And that's exhausting, you know? Yes. It's not that the impact has changed. It's just that we're like, we'll just hold all the things at the same time. So I'm curious what you all think about that. Have you experienced that?
No, I totally agree. I think that, and that's something that I've always said is there's that pre-COVID and post-COVID person. Mm-hmm. I definitely am a whole different person from COVID myself. So I think that for me, it's not just the aspect of just COVID. It's the sensitivity all around the world. And now it's more of like, everyone is in this fight or flight mode, trying to get through the day and trying to get through all of these things when, you know, we're all kind of going through it collectively as a whole. So trying to figure out those boundaries and setting ourselves up for a good path ahead of us is something that is important too as well. No, I agree.
It's interesting to hear you talk about living, 1,000 lives in the last 5 years. I certainly feel that in my own life, personally, professionally, just with current events, everything happening. And what I've been wrestling with, I think, is that idea of, what did we learn from COVID? We did have that collective pause. We did have that collective trauma. We had that collective experience of valuing mental health. And it does kind of feel like we've just kind of gone back to the way life was before COVID. And so I think that's why conversations like this are extra important to keep that focus on mental health, because the only way to get through is to get through, but we have to do that in a healthy, boundary-filled way, right?
Exactly. And so, I think there is something really, I'll be glass half full and say potentially beautiful about thinking about this experience that we've had, right? Because it's not just about COVID, but it's about, how we've evolved and changed, how things have gone on in our worlds in our individual lives.
Yes.
And I think even in that time when mental health care was something that was very trendy, there was a lot more openness to talk about it. The phrasing of it's okay to not be okay, right? That was becoming more and more commonplace. And so there became this idea that we accept that there are people who hit points of crisis and they need to be taken care of well. And that is true and will continue to be true. But I think what's happening now that we are 5 years removed from that trending place and you're seeing a little bit less of the prioritization around focus and investment around mental health and wellness is that we have to say, well, what's the next question after that? What's the next statement? Because it's not the case. It's not accurate that someone will hit a point of crisis, a point of distress, go get it taken care of and come back like nothing ever happened and not have any other points of that journey that are very difficult. Even just to re-enter the workforce, if you take a leave of absence, is its own journey.
Absolutely.
And so what I would like to see folks doing, especially at work, is to be able to go along with people for the long haul around what mental health support looks like for them. Especially if they're going to have to manage and incorporate, let's say, a certain diagnosis, right, in their life. That's not a one and done thing. That's something that you're going to have to manage and incorporate. So how might we better support people around us rather than, if we're coming back to hustle culture, right, rather than expect them to continue to produce no matter what? I think that mentality is pretty damaging for folks.
I totally agree. And I think, as we were preparing for our conversation today, you and I were talking about this idea of hustle culture and just exhaustion as the status symbol. Like, there's discomfort with a counterculture. There's this comfort with riding against the current and trying to push back and trying to set those boundaries. And and just to tie in Avalon Bay's culture a little bit, one of the things that we really value is a spirit of caring. And so I loved what you were saying in terms of really caring about people, not just in those moments of crisis, but how do they re-enter the workforce? How do they keep in the workforce? How do they you know, let's say you come back from a certain event or a certain mm-hmm. situation in your personal life, how do you show up at work the mm-hmm. next time?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, that's where Lyra is extremely helpful for associates mm-hmm. and for, you know, the rest of Lyra's clients. And how do we as a work culture, as a society, how do we do better in that area?
Sure. And I would say too, you really just sparked something for me, because we're talking about people, right, who hit a point of crisis or distress and then have to get what they need in spite of that. But I think really, if you're going to be countercultural, to your point, you have to start before that. So we got to start checking on people that are still in the workplace, working and grinding and performing and producing, right, and listen to, I'm a firm believer that language shapes culture. So I think listening to how people talk about their work and their exhaustion really illuminates what that cultural norm is. So for example, if you've got somebody coming in and, you know, greeting in the morning, how are you doing? Really exhausted. I got like so much to do, you know, today. And you're like, oh yeah, me too. Okay, have a good day. Like what was that? Not that you have to save anybody from themselves or intervene by any means. I'm not suggesting right. that. Right. But I am suggesting that we shouldn't necessarily be okay with people being perpetually exhausted or feel like the only way we can contribute to a conversation is by working to the point of exhaustion or overworking. Exactly. That shouldn't be our cultural norm, that means you're doing a good job.
Absolutely. I very much agree with that. And so what are some tips or some strategies? Like, how do we actually navigate environments that celebrate burnout as ambition without feeling like we're falling behind?
So there's a lot of potential things to do with that. And Lyra does have, we have a lot of different, you know, groups, workshops, on-demand courses, videos in the library, as Nicole mentioned, about this. But I do think that if you are going to be countercultural, you have to think broader than just a singular organization, that this is kind of a cultural norm in a national sense, you know, in kind of a Western world sense. So you're doing something a lot bigger than just in your sphere of influence, which means it will be uncommon and it probably will be uncomfortable. And you might have to risk feeling critiqued or labeled in a certain way by those who are not doing what you're doing. So there's a fear there, I think, sometimes unfounded, but I think there's a fear that, hey, if I do have, you know, better boundaries, if I do say, you know what, I'm really going to stop working once the sun is no longer out, just thinking out loud, you know, if I'm going to do that, now I'm lazy. Now I'm not a team player. Now I'm not going to get promoted. You know, you have all these fears. And so I think one way we can do that, and I say we as leaders, as managers, is to really break that association. To say, hey, you know what? I'm not going to reward that. I'm not going to reward overwork. I'm not going to reinforce, hey, thanks for going above and beyond every weekend and night. You know, like those types of things. How do we break that apart and say, you know what? Actually, how you are as you work, how okay you are with this work matters to me just as much as what you're producing, if not more. You know, I think that is countercultural. I think that's something very different rather than doesn't really matter as long as you can give me what I need, as long as you can give me the deliverables.
And I think part of for our leaders and our people managers specifically, it's that idea of role modeling that behavior.
Yes.
So it's got to come from the ground up and it's also mm-hmm. got to come from the top down to yeah. really shift the culture, to really practice what we preach, for lack of a better phrase.
Absolutely.
Right? It's that whole deeds, not words situation. Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example on our team. One thing we realized, you know, because sometimes these cultures of overwork and hustle, it seeps in, it's in the air. So it's not like you even intend to do it. But one of the things on our team, we said, you know what, we're going to stop with the multitasking. Let's create the single tasking is what we're doing. We're not going to be sending messages while we're in the meetings. We're not going to be sending email, you know, and having our brains every which way. We're going to try and be fully present in the single task that we're doing one at a time. We can actually plan for capacity, you know, over the year, rather than just saying yes immediately and impulsively to all the things and try to be everything to everyone everywhere all of the time. Let's try to break that. So I think getting specific and intentional about those types of things really helps that countercultural piece start to come to life.
And there's some unlearning that needs to get done, right? I mean, I know we were discussing the pandemic, and earlier in my career, pre-COVID, I was very bought into hustle culture. Mm-hmm. And I mm-hmm. think COVID really illuminated for myself this idea of, oh, maybe you don't have to live life this way. Maybe there are more things to life than just work. And that's not to say that my career and my professional fulfillment aren't important to me.
Yes.
But there's more out there. There's got to be more.
Right? There has to be
and more. How do you live a full life? And part of it is setting those boundaries. Part of it is doing everything you can not to burn out and to create a culture where burnout is not celebrated. Mm-hmm. I think with that unlearning, how can we begin to unlearn that belief that constant productivity and exhaustion are signs of success?
Yeah. And I actually, so the word signs is what I'm thinking about. So rather than looking at what are the signs that I'm successful, I think we have to start getting, and we as an individual people need to start looking more at what are the signs that I'm not doing well. So I think when we have that hustle culture and that produce over anything, what happens is people will ignore the check engine lights on their bodies, if you will. You know, if I'm going to make an analogous to a car. Things are going on. You're just not paying attention to them, or you're like, it's fine. Everything's fine. My shoulders are up to my ears. My blood pressure is sky high every time I go to the doctor. It's fine. Okay. I've not had a good night's sleep in I don't know how long. My teeth are like a row because my jaw is so tight. Can't even do that. But so you're ignoring all of these signs of chronic stress. And this is what I like to say a lot when I'm presenting with Lyra is that that becomes a matter of life and death. Because that chronic stress is not going anywhere. Even if you're not necessarily aware of it, that stuff is impacting your body in a certain way, in your mind. And so a lot of folks who are used to going, producing, doing, helping, fixing, they will go at the expense of those signs and they don't know it till it's too late or till they cannot do anything else. They reach that point of burnout and then have to stop. They don't have a choice. So rather than doing that, what I would propose is that you start to recognize the signs in yourself when you need to rest. And rest, as Trisha Hershey says, rest as a human right, not as a means to do more, not as a limitation, but as a statement of fact that mortal people need to rest. Okay, that's just is what it is. And so I think getting those signs early on, monitoring yourself, adapting and adjusting what's going on in your world and your workload based on what's those signs in your body and in your mind, that's a really great first step to me.
So you mentioned earlier these different identities that you have. And from an intersectionality perspective, we've all got identities going on that might influence our capacity and might influence our drive to fix, support, care for, et cetera. And so I'm curious, since this is a WLN podcast and, you know, as both of us are women, just that idea of as women, as a mother, as you name it, what are some ways that you think as women, our tendency to support, our tendency to nurture, how does that contribute to this kind of conversation around hustle culture?
Well, first, let me say this. Women are women because they identify as such, not because they're nurturing and caring. So if you are someone who identifies as a woman, but don't feel like you have the same level, that's okay. Okay. Because I feel like one of the things that women can, and I'm speaking in general tones here, but women can do to each other is kind of put this hierarchy, right, of femininity and who fits the box. There's no box. Take the box out. Okay. So we just go do that. So how you show up.
Thank you for that. Absolutely.
Yeah. We just going to name that. Okay.
Yes.
Because I think what happened, this is one of my biggest pet peeves, y'all, is the labeling of good or bad. So I'm a bad mom because I don't always want to hug on my kids, right? Okay, I'm such a bad employee because I had to leave to pick up kids early. And not the kids are the only example around women. But you see what I mean? Where you start to label and critique. Am I not like a real woman because I don't want to have kids? Enough of that.
Exactly. Okay,
so yeah.
You're here. You heard it here
exactly.
First.
Exactly. Yes, because I think what happens a lot of times with this cisgender kind of heterosexual view of woman, American view of womanhood is that what it means to hustle and produce starts to be very specific and exclusionary. So what it means to juggle, what it means to be a working mother and all of those things start to come with their own self-critique. And that adds a level of pressure and anxiety that is so unnecessary. We have more than enough, okay, to worry
about. There's so many other things to worry about.
There are so many other things other than putting that type of pressure
on ourselves.
What? Right? I want to name that first because I think that that is quite important. Also, so I'm going to say in the same vein, even with that within group diversity that I'll name, I think that a lot of women who do tend to have a history, especially, let me call out my oldest daughters, okay? These people who are, yes, my strong, quote unquote, women, for whatever reason that is. Those people who are used to fixing and solving and doing and caring for, it's a little bit of a double standard there. Okay. And by little, I mean a lot, because what will happen is we'll care for the people, we'll do the things. But when it comes to self-care, when it comes to nurturing our own stuff, see, y'all already know, don't you?
Absolutely.
Last people to do it, you're going to minimize, you're not going to go there. To the point where I've asked a lot of women, I said, if I talk to you like you talk to you, how might that go? Would you be friends with me? Would you want to hang
out? The self-talk matters more than people ever give it credit for.
Yes. So, I mean, it goes along, I think, also with that diversity around femininity, that what we're telling ourselves, how we critique and pressure ourselves to be almost superhuman is really not, it's not okay. I was listening to a podcast too the other day, speaking of podcasts, and someone was talking about being burnt out as women and mothers, but then having what she called a second burn. So she called it where you already are on fumes, but you just keep going. Like you really don't have anything else. You're just burning whatever little was left. You know what I'm talking about? I don't know if y'all have.
Sure do.
I have. Yep. Not a pretty sight. Okay. And very much leads to resentment and ineffective care to me. I cannot care for my children. I cannot show up at work well for my spouse well when I'm doing that. I start to get very bitter about being needed at all. And so it really would behoove me to take care of myself in the first place before I get to that point.
It's like airplanes with the putting your own mask on before you put it onto another person, even your kid.
Yes. Yeah. So this idea that we are, here we go again with the labeling, right? Like bad coworkers, bad mom, bad friends, bad daughters, because we are doing something for our own benefit, that it's selfish. That is self-serving. We don't really need to. It's just not true.
Yeah. Nicole, are you an oldest daughter?
Sure am.
Okay.
And I definitely, Andrea's, as you were talking about, you know, how we automatically kind of go into that, in that place, right? And wanting to protect, wanting to nurture everyone around you. And I think growing up for me, I grew up with just my mother and when my sister came along, I had this want and need to be that example and be that protector for her. And even now and nowadays, I find myself like beating myself up for the way that I come across to her because I'm not being that person that I should be for her. And I think what you're saying is like, we don't just have that like burnout of like work and, you know, everything going on. It's everything in our lives. And by the time that I do get to her, I'm running on a little bit of sizzle, a little bit of sizzle. And what I give to her is not what I want to.
Sure.
I'm not able to be there for her. So
exactly.
I think it's very important to put ourselves first and take care of ourselves and doing things for ourselves, whether it's small, right? Like I go and get like pretzels at Auntie Annie's and that is my thing. Like that is my self-care. I go there, I sit down, I people watch, I enjoy my pretzels. And then I kind of go back to my everyday. And if I don't, you know, have that little moment of self-care, I feel like I'm not grounded. I'm not able to be there for everyone the way I want to be.
That's so poignant. I'm really glad you said that. I'll tell you recently, I decided to make a book nook in my house. I love to read. I'm a good reader. And decided to make a place in my house. And so I did it, decorated it, actually invested in something just me wanted in the house, which is novel. Okay. But one of my children came in and said, oh, I could live in here. I said, you sure cannot? Nope, you will not live in here. You do not come in here. You know, and so, but really,
my safe place
is mine. Right. But that's that kind of metaphor. I'm bringing that up because that is the work to say, what is it that I think I need to refill, pursue that, and do it without apology or guilt or unnecessarily sacrificing it to somebody else.
Yeah, it's powerful. And it's important because, you know, you just mentioned the idea of inefficient, of how burnout actually leads to inefficiencies.
Oh,
and I think, you know, from a work perspective, that's so true, right? If you come into work and you've got your invisible backpack of things going on in your life and you are not able to be fully present, your results are going to suffer. And so it really is, you got to put your oxygen mask on before anyone else.
100%.
I am a youngest daughter, proudly. So Nicole, a word of advice as the self-sufficient younger daughter that I am, she's got this. It's okay. You've done your part.
Wow.
And so I think there's a moment, you know, where we all navigate life of, I need this person in this different way, right? Relationships ebb and flow. And I think once you do set a boundary with someone, upholding that boundary, whether it is your sister or your child, right? That book is yours. I love that you talked about, Nicole, your time that you carve out for yourself. And Andrea, you literally carved out a space for yourself. Yeah. And I think that's just very important to highlight and to cultivate for ourselves, you know, moving forward with Mental Health Day on October 10th. And every day is Mental Health Day. It's not just on one day, right? 100%. Every day is Mental Health Day.
Yes. I love what you said about the space because I think it's so easy for people, but especially for women to feel as though they cannot take up space, you know, whether that's physically or emotionally, like you mentioned. Yes. Oh, I get you, fellow eldest daughter. I get where you're like, I have to move back because these other people need other things. And it's okay to take up space that's not you removing the potential from them to be cared for. It's just adding yourself to the mix as well. And so I think that's really powerful, that space taking that we're saying, or making. Tip taking sounds too aggressive. You can say make space.
Is it the Shirley Chisholm quote of bring your own folding chair to the table, right? If there's not room.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Bring your own chair. Yeah.
Thanks. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I know I could talk to you for, you know, probably another 3 hours, but I know we all have.
Especially now we got the family and Morgan issues. Well, exactly. Just get started now. Yeah.
So before we kind of go through our lightning round of some fun questions, I'm curious what advice you have for listeners, both inside and outside Avalon Bay, to take care of themselves from a mental health and wellness perspective?
Yeah, it's a big question. I mean, I love the space making. I think that's great too. You know, and I also want to name, there are different groups of people listening to this right now. So preventing and kind of managing your own feelings of exhaustion and burnout is different than recovering from it. So if you are actually in that active place where you like, I got nothing to give, I do want to encourage you that it's possible to seek support. It's okay if it's inconvenient and uncomfortable or weird. Just do the next part that you can do in caring for yourself and recovering from that. Give yourself room and patience to reorient to work, to find joy again in that work, you know, repurpose your why and your values for working. But those who are trying to just kind of get on a journey of like, yeah, I need to consistently taking better care of myself, being more countercultural is healthy. That's good too. And support is there as well. But what you're going to have to do is start looking at more of the countercultural pieces and maybe even how you can support other folks who are actively trying to recover. So I would say really just to summarize, to know where you are in that point and not apologize for getting what you need in light of that.
I think that's excellent advice. And I couldn't have picked a better segue into what Nicole had mentioned earlier of her own mental health journey, right? We're all on our own mental health journeys. And so recognizing where we are, what we need, what space or time do we need to take or make for ourselves is really the next step. It's that first step. So thank you for that. We are going to shift into our lightning round of fun questions. So Nicole, I think you've got the first one.
I sure do. So we kind of went over this as far as work. But outside of work, what inspires you?
Outside of work. You know what I'm going to say? My kids.
I love that.
They do inspire me. I learn from them regularly. So I'm going to pick them. Be nice to them today.
Summer or winter?
Okay, so I live in Texas. So I don't know what you're talking about with that last word. So I'm going to say summer clothes, winter temps. Oh, what?
Okay, right on.
That's good. I am a TV girly, but what is your favorite binge-worthy TV show?
I don't know if I binge it. Can I say like I watch it?
Yeah, comfort TV show, something that you replay.
I have seen every episode multiple times of Gilmore Girls, and I have paraphernalia around my home. There are many things. There's a Gilmore Girls quote in the book. There's all this stuff. It's just everywhere. So Lorelai and Rory are definitely regulars in my home, I will
say. Oh, that's so great.
So this one, you know, in light of your book nook, what is the most impactful book you've read?
This is so hard.
Oh, I'm making you pick a favorite child right now. I know. I'm sorry.
It really is. That is very disrespectful. Let me see. Impactful book. You know what I think of? I'll say the first one I think of, so I don't overthink it. High school, I read Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye. And that changed. I'd always liked to read, I think, up until, but I became more of a focused reader. These Black female authors, this identity journey and development that happened in that book, it really changed a lot of. I went on to minor in African American studies in college. Like, it really just kind of shaped a lot of my formative years in my education. So I'll pick that book.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, because again, I feel like we could talk for another several hours on this topic. You've got things to do, and so do we. So thank you. any parting words of wisdom before I wrap us up?
Give yourself grace and the courage to be imperfect.
Thank you, Dr. Andrea Holman, for joining us today. We learned a lot. I hope you learned a lot. And we really appreciate the great insights that you have. To learn more about Lyra, you can go to lyrahealth.com, L-Y-R-A, health.com. And to learn more about Avalon Bay, please visit us at avaloncommunities.com. So Avalon, A-V-A-L-O-N. Remember to take care. Remember to take care of ourselves and each other, and your mental health matters. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Speak Up. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and found practical inspiration to fuel your own personal and professional journey. If you'd like to hear more, be sure to follow Avalon Bay Communities on social media and subscribe to the show for updates on future episodes. A big thank you to our hosts, guests, Women's Leadership Network members, and to all of you for listening.